96.7 KROQ. I am not great with names.
How can you say that? What about your friend Rob Dyrdek?
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
For those of you who didn't see, Rob Dyrdek is part of Rob Dyrdek Day. And we'll talk more about that and more with Rob Dyrdek. Again, Rob is getting 41. Rob Dyrdek is in the studio. He is half of Robin Big. Wow!
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Rob Dyrdek. Rob Dyrdek stopped by.
Why would I say that?
Multiple times.
I was going to ask you.
I watch that show regularly.
I'd like to know if you... Do you know a Rob Dyrdek?
I don't.
Is that where that was coming from?
Why would I say that?
Your childhood friend with a Rob Dyrdek?
I have it written down right on my... In my paperwork?
Rob Dyrdek. Did you used to throw rocks at a guy named Rob Dyrdek?
No, Rob Dyrdek.
Robbie Joyner.
Rob Dyrdek.
Wow.
You watch the show and you
know, I watch the show regularly.
And you know his name.
Yes.
Off the air, you've been fine.
Yep. Yeah. On air, you, to his face, every time called him Rob Dyrdek.
Why wouldn't someone say, hey, what's that about?
Because it's too funny. We said, let's see how long Kevin can go before he corrects himself. Well, answer was, never.
Now I'm a jackass.
Now?
I'm just saying, I liked him.
You want to listen one more time?
Yep.
No.
Rob Dyrdek was in the station.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
For those of you who didn't see, Rob Dyrdek is part of Rob Dyrdek. And we'll talk more about that and more with Rob Dyrdek. Again, Rob is getting 41. Rob Dyrdek is in the studio. He is half of Robin Big.
That was A Moment.
Why wouldn't he correct
Kevin?
Me?
Too nice.
Polite.
Too nice.
What the hell?
I have bought the website, though. What would Rob Dyrdek do? I've got that up and running. So if you need to check that out for entertainment news, you can find that.
We can't stop you, by the way.
That's a surprise. Yes, well, somebody could point it out if I'm being such an idiot.
When you see those interviews of, like, old Nazi generals that they find somewhere in Argentina, they're like, why didn't you try and stop Hitler? You're like, you can't. You just can't.
It just wasn't that. You don't know. You weren't there. It was a different sort of atmosphere. We feared for our lives. We were just following orders. That's what we say all the time.
That's embarrassing.
Right, I'm sure Rob Dyrdek in some places is very happy. You mentioned him so much on the air.
Remember when I ran into, I can't remember which member it was of U2, I called him by the wrong name. That was good.
You sat next to him at the Grammys when you were a seat filler that year.
Mm-hmm.
And said, hey, Bono, how's it going?
I can't remember.
It was The Edge?
It was, yeah, something like that. John I was like, Harry? Oh, sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I got
maybe
a word scramble.
Rob Dyrdek.
I've got a word scramble going on in my head.
Yeah. Maybe you should ask Corinne Raley Bay.
Come on, you guys. Don't let me be such a jackass if he's in the studio.
What are we going to say on the air live?
Yes!
Kevin, it's Dyrdek.
You've never corrected me before on the air.
I wasn't in the studio at the time to do that. I was in the room howling with laughter.
They did put it up on the call screen. I think Lightning put up on the call screen with the pronunciation. It's Dyrdek is what it said up on
the screen. Yeah, and I was annoyed by that because I know.
That's right.
I was. I actually thought, what is he doing?
That's why we don't correct you. Because you get annoyed at us.
I watch that show regularly. What a douche.
Because Kevin, goddammit.
The radio show in your head sounds a lot better than the one that comes out of your mouth.
I'm not a fan of me.
Yeah.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
For those of you who didn't see, Rob Dyrdek is part of Robin Big. And we'll talk more about that and more with Rob Dyrdek. Again, Rob is getting 41. Rob Dyrdek is in the studio. He is half of Robin Big.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Hey, Rob.
Rob Durden's on the phone right now, Kevin.
Hey, Rob.
Rob Dyrdek here.
Dude.
Rob Dyrdek here.
Why is it that you would not, I mean, after the, like, third time, why wouldn't you correct me?
You want to know what? It was kind of funny to me. But
everyone's laughing except for me.
Look, but being kept enunciating it at you, you weren't hearing it. So I was like, it's almost kind of funny that you can't hear everybody else saying it. Trying to help him.
Every time I would say it wrong, I don't even remember this, but immediately afterwards would say it right.
Yeah.
And, well, because I didn't want our guests to be embarrassed.
And our producer put it up on your computer screen there for you to see, Kevin.
He did it. When I saw that up on the screen, I thought, well, I know that. Why is he putting that up there?
You got annoyed with him.
I was very annoyed. I had no idea. I was.
Yeah, you couldn't pretty much butcher it any worse.
Hey, you're lucky it was just
Dire Deck.
Yeah,
but it's hard to miss that K. It's hard to turn that K into an N.
It is hard to do Dyrdek. Yeah.
Dyrdek is fresh.
I don't know where that came from. I know your name.
You know what I'm saying? You want to know? You just know me as Rob.
I do.
Rob
that's true.
Big.
But all right, Rob. I'm sorry.
How lucky are you, Kevin, that only Rob came in and not Bag?
So when you see Stryker on the TV on The Ellen Show or run into him on a K-Rock appearance, you think he looks like a normal guy. That's because you don't know what's going on in his pants.
We got to take care of the most important business, maybe not just of this week, but maybe of my whole life. And that's the fact that DJ Stryker here on the world famous K-Rock has a tail.
Yes.
Has a tail.
What, Ralph?
What's the problem?
I just think
has a tail.
This smacks to me of urban legend already.
But we know that some people do.
Yeah, but I don't think this is something you just find out about somebody.
All right. Before
we talk to him, he's the one who kept it a secret all these years. He's the one who just finally brought it up on Loveline the other night.
Before we talk to Stryker.
Stryker has a tail.
Tail.
We have a theme.
Now, he has a theme. That's awesome.
Wow, how much went into that?
A lot, you can tell.
Stryker.
Well, what are you hearing exactly?
That you have a tail.
That's exactly it.
Okay. All right. I'll field that one. Dr. Drew was going around at Acoustic Christmas. This is my memory. It may not be exactly right, but he was going around at Acoustic Christmas telling everybody he had just found out that you had a tail. I guess it's something that came up on Loveline, and he's a reliable source. I think if Dr. Drew says it, it's generally true, and he said that he even felt it through your clothes, and it's really there, and you can wiggle it.
Did you ask him where his father was and what's going on with him?
Yeah, no kidding. That's Drew's answer to everything. You were touched, weren't you? You were touched. And the poor listener goes,
molested
no,
as a
no,
child.
You were touched. Okay, I was touched.
Stryker, where would he be getting something like that? He didn't pull that out of thin air.
No, he didn't really pull out of thin air. You know, sometimes when you're talking on the radio, you kind of forget you're on the radio.
Right.
So we're talking to some lady, and actually, I don't remember what she was talking about. And I'm like, Drew, I have something on the bottom of my back that is kind of weird. And when I move it like that, I don't know what the hell this is, but I think it's normal. And he said, let me feel it. So I got in that somewhat weird position. It's definitely above the anus, boys.
Yeah, uh-huh. You got that position that you used to be in. All
right. Right. And then Jared Leto. And then he grabbed it, and you know when you freak the doctor out with a weird thing,
yes,
you know something's there.
When you freak out Dr. Drew, who's seen everything,
yes,
this is Dr. Drew from yesterday on our show.
You say you examined it. You didn't actually see it, though, right?
No, I keep telling him I'd like to see it, but he will not let me see it. But I have examined it, and Lisa Warden examined it too.
Oh,
and get
wow.
her in there. She will tell you in glorious detail. She
All right, there
out.
You go, Lisa Warden.
Saw
music
it too.
Director K-Rock. She's our music director.
Drew told us in the conversation yesterday, Stryker, that it is not it's not common by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not unusual for a doctor to encounter those throughout his life. I mean, he said it does happen, but that yours was a pretty good-sized tail.
Well, I'm crazy, man.
Dude.
What?
He's crazy.
You know what that means, Stryker?
Stryker has a tail!
Tail.
Stryker,
I love how you guys call it a tail, and I will go with tail. And there is a big bone there when I move and might twist my back a little bit. But if you wanted to take a picture of my rear end,
yes,
you know,
that's what we'd like to do. In an odd way,
I don't think you would say that man is a monkey necessarily walking around.
So would you see a tail if we saw your lower back?
Sorry to sadden you, but you would not.
You wouldn't. See, I told
you.
This is all just hype.
Any sort of nub at all?
Is that Lisa May?
Yes. Yeah, she wants to know about your nub.
Lisa May, yeah, for you.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second. Because Dr. Drew, he held up his fingers to indicate that it was like a couple of... What? What is everybody laughing at now?
Psychomite is retching in the corner into the trash can.
He's throwing up.
He's throwing up.
Stop it.
He has a problem with this topic. It grosses him out. I don't know why. We think it's awesome.
What's there to throw up about? This is the greatest news in the world.
The things that don't make him throw
yes.
up. And then this does. It's
He's
amazing.
Literally throwing up.
Dr. Drew said it's a couple of inches long and you can actually wiggle it. Is he overstating the case, Stryker?
He's slightly exaggerating, I would say. There is something there. It's not there when I'm just standing up, but if I contort myself, there is something there.
Okay.
And you know, and I always thought, honestly, it was something normal until I finally was with a certain human being, a lady, when I finally got some in my life, and she's like, what the hell is that?
Now, here's where that brings us to point number two with our conversation with Dr. Drew yesterday.
There's a piece of the story here I want to let Stryker tell you. It somebody actually tipped him off. He wasn't really. He thought everyone had one.
All right. So what is the story that you need to tell us that somebody tipped you off?
Honestly, I had felt it in my life. Like if I would do
you know, as like he mentioned, certain positions, like if I would do sit-ups, I would feel it, and I would, like, kind of move to one cheek a little bit while doing them.
Right.
And no one said anything about it.
So you can't do sit-ups.
My mother never said anything. My father, nobody.
Well, they don't want poor little Stryker to know he's got a tail, you know?
I got bad parents, man. But yeah.
All right, so who's the girl that found out?
I don't even know. It was in the late 90s in Tucson, Arizona.
Right.
And she's like, what is that? I'm like, I don't know. It's just my bones out there.
It's just my bone out there.
It's my butt knuckle.
I cannot crack the knuckle, Ralph.
Oh, it's too bad.
We were talking yesterday about whether this is feasible, because I'm having trouble, without a photo, I'm having trouble visualizing what you're packing back there, Stryker. But could you have a girl in front of you and a girl behind you and be doing them both at the same time?
You know what? That is quite possible.
Never tried it.
Oh, never thought about that, did you?
You'd be willing to, wouldn't you? Nice.
Stop throwing up. Seriously.
Is he really still vomiting?
Yeah. He is such a freak. Yeah.
You know how people find certain things just repulsive? I've never seen
nothing
anybody.
Nothing grosses Mike out.
Yeah, but especially this.
Yeah.
This is the best news ever.
But a little protrusion on the coccyx, and
wow.
He goes all to pieces.
Easy there.
Stryker, does it have fur on it?
Oh my God!
Well, there is no fur on there.
There's no fur. Okay.
No, seriously, Stryker, how far does it stick out? If you had to guess,
you got to ask Dr. Drew because he's the one that corrects.
Well, you can
live with it your whole life.
You can give us an estimate. Is it less than 1 foot?
Less than 12 inches?
Yeah, I'm just joking. Give us an estimate of some kind.
Now, have you ever seen a baboon's ass?
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Kind of like that.
It's like a baboon's ass.
I am just
okay.
So you're red and inflamed as well?
No, it's a couple inches.
A couple inches?
Stryker,
that's significant.
Does it wag when a fire truck goes by?
No, but it wags when I go by the hydrant.
It does.
There we go.
Oh, there you go.
Nice. Nicely done.
Can you use it for anything? Can you dial a phone with it? Can you make a cup of tea with it?
It's like 20 questions. You're trying to figure it out. Is it bigger than a bread box? Can you use it for anything?
Why would he ever try to dial a phone with it?
I'm trying to find out how useful it is.
What sense does that make?
Bean had when he tried.
Stryker, have you ever dialed a phone with it?
No, but I wish they had that old show from the 70s and 80s. That's incredible. I could go on there.
Yes,
that's
you true. Could.
Fran Tarkington would introduce you.
Yeah. Here's another question I have for you. And of course, I have a million questions, but we're going to run out of time here in a second. Ralph said this is not the type of thing we would find out about you at this point. And that brings up this question. Why has this never come up? You've been doing Loveline for a long time. You've been on K-Rock for years and years and years. Why has this never been revealed before this week?
The main reason is not because I'm super shy or anything about it, although it does kind of weird me out to now freaking everyone that listens to K-Rock knows. But just because it just seems somewhat normal to me until Dr. Drew felt it, and he freaked out about it.
Yeah, that's not something you want to have happen. Dr. Drew has a calm demeanor no matter what goes on. If you
right,
freak him
true.
Out, there's something wrong.
Correct.
But I don't believe you, by the way, that you say you thought it was – I mean, you thought it was normal when you were 13 or 14 or 15, but then once you started being with the ladies and started seeing other guys and other women that didn't have a tail, you had to realize you were one in a million.
I wasn't grabbing men's buttocks.
No, well, but you certainly saw that you know, other guys, they didn't have it though. You've known for a long time that you're a freak show, right?
A little bit.
Weren't you like playing football in high school and you're hanging out in the locker room and you go, "Woo, I got hit right in the tail today. That hurt like crazy." And the other guy said, "What? What are you talking about, tail? Didn't something like that
Coach,
happen?
Where do you keep the tail pads?"
Your whole
jeez, we don't have any tail pads, son.
Your whole life? Come on. You don't go through life with a tail and think it's normal?
No, you learned very early in life that you're one of a kind.
I love Stryker.
Yeah, most people aren't doing sit-ups and they start spinning, you know, like a top.
Psycho Mike, you live in Pasadena or South Pasadena? Which city are you in?
I reside in South Pasadena.
Okay.
And what's the buzz? What's the buzz on the streets of your town? What have you been seeing lately?
No cussing, dude. Cleaning up your mouth. That's what it's all about in SP.
South Pasadena is an official no cussing zone this week.
Wow, I don't think I've ever heard of this before. I mean, in the United States, I think there are other countries in the world where I think you get in trouble for using that kind of language out loud, but
Singapore,
not so much
for
here.
Instance.
Singapore, yeah.
The idea came from a 14-year-old boy who came up with the idea. He's a fun-loving South Pasadena high school freshman named McKay Hatch. Rides a unicycycle. He said,
say no more.
Let's do a no-cussing week. And then against all judgment, the mayor of South Pasadena said, yes, that's a good idea.
How'd it get to the mayor?
Mayor?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor Michael Cacciotti on the line with us from South Pasadena. So this young McKay Hatch got the word out that he was trying to get his classmates and I guess other people in the community to stop cussing. How did you find out about it?
You know, McKay appeared at a city council meeting a few weeks ago and issued a challenge not only to his fellow classmates but to the city council and the citizens of South Pasadena to join his no cussing challenge. So we accepted. We put it on the agenda for tonight. And the entire city council, we're going to issue him a proclamation declaring a March 3rd through 7th No Cussing Week in historic, beautiful city of South Pasadena.
I got to tell you, I was not aware that all of the problems in the world had already been solved. So we have time for this. That's good news.
Well, clearly the city council was swearing up a storm and something had to be done. Is that what happened, Mayor?
No, we've attempted many times, but no, it's an effort to really recognize just outstanding kids in our community like McKay and others. Who've taken a stand up for principles and kind of a stand against popular, popular values out there that aren't, where people do cuss a lot.
All right, let me ask you this, Mr. Mayor. Maybe I want to make sure I'm clear on this before I say something I might end up regretting later. McKay Hatch, he's dying or something, right? I mean, it's like he's got a week to live and this is the way to pat him on the head and say good boy and let him die happy. I mean, that clearly is what you're doing here, right?
Let's make a wish.
No. It's Make-A-Wish, right?
No, we really try to. We've recognized kids in our community that do great things. Just last night, four of our high school students, classmates of McKay, hosted a video about the plight of kids in Africa that are taken by rebel forces and forced into war. So we try to every chance we get, we try to recognize kids in our community that really do something outstanding.
He says, this 14-year-old unicycle rider, he says, by encouraging his classmates to stop using their favorite four-letter words, Hatch is hoping it'll be easier for them to say no when it comes to tougher decisions like drugs and alcohol.
You know, it really is true. I mean, another thing this does really creates an awareness of the harmful impacts. Just, you know, we all kind of laugh at it, cussing, but there's really serious harmful impacts. When people cuss in your presence, in anybody's presence, what's the impact on other people? It causes tension, hostility, anger, uneasiness.
I don't feel any of that.
It is almost impossible to drink and do drugs without cussing.
Is that right?
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Can't physically do it?
Yeah.
I don't know that that's true, Lisa.
I'm pretty sure. You try
it. I think maybe you're mocking.
You try and see.
Mr. Mayor, have you seen this TV show South Park?
A few times.
Okay. How hilarious is that show? How lame would that show be if they didn't cuss on it?
Good point.
I'm saying there are times when swearing is essential. Look, this is Bean speaking here. I think you guys would back me up in this. I don't have a potty mouth. I don't have a problem with swearing all the time when I shouldn't and stuff like that. But there are times when those are the words you need to make the impact. There are times when those are the funny words and those are the words that say precisely what it is you're trying to say. And you're taking away colors out of my palette if I can't swear.
I mean, I think the issues for McKay and the rest of us are just, you know, set your goals high. Try not to offend people when you're around them. Treat people with respect. It's simply just try to exercise the golden rule every day. Treat people the way you want to be treated.
I can understand that you would say that if he was your kid, but if you're running a meeting and a 14-year-old boy comes up and says, here's how to get people to stop doing drugs and all that, and it's by not cussing, you go, okay, noted. And then you move on with the real business.
No, you know,
you don't say, yes, we'll give you an award.
You know, I've been a soccer coach for now nearly 30 years, coaching youth, high school, and college. And that's one of my rules at the beginning of the year. There's no cussing during the season. If you cuss, go down and give me 10 push-ups.
I think I could understand that as the coach of a team because right. You have the option of not playing on that team if you don't like it.
Right.
And you're running a city, dude.
You know, it's just a reminder to all of us, you know, try to establish good habits every day and treat people with respect at your job, in your families, and your friends, at school, at work, even in a political arena. I mean, treat people, let's elevate the discourse. Let's have civility now.
I see where you're coming from, and I honestly believe, Mr. Mayor, that your intentions are pure, but it seems like whatever time in South Pasadena they're spending talking about not, you know, saying damn, it seems like that time would be better spent doing the types of things that you're talking about. Spend time with your kids, for instance. Get your kids involved in extracurricular activities. Other things that really have a more direct result on keeping them away from having too much free time and getting into drugs and bad habits.
That's a great point. I mean, I think we've got to do it all. I think it's a multi-pronged approach, you know, but you've got to recognize kids that take a stand that something unpopular such as this or taking a stand against drugs, against violence, against gangs.
You're going to get the hell beaten out of this kid. That's what's going to happen.
It is ironic. It's ironic that this kid is going to get beat up every single day now.
He's
going
to ride up to the little podium on his unicycle, and he's going to say, let's not cuss. And then he's just going to get beaten to hell, dude. Why do you hate
heck.
This kid?
Beaten to heck.
Heck, heck.
What does that say about our culture? Kids, how do kids supposed to treat each other with respect?
Why do you hate McKay Hatch? Why do you hate him?
I think it says pick your battles. Pick the reasonable battles that can be won, I think is what it says about our culture.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, if this kid survives the week, we're going to be pleased. We're going to be happy. And South Pasadena, it sounds like a nice place to live, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate you coming on K-Rock and talking to us today.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye. Bye.
You bet. Bye-bye.
You think the mayor of South Pasadena used to ride a unicycle when he was in high school?
That's right. I think he still rides a unicycle.
That's the connection.
Look, he sounded like a nice guy, and I totally understand the positive things that he's trying to promote.
Sure.
But
I don't know that we need to go to 14-year-olds to tell us how to live life.
But I also don't think...
He doesn't know.
I also don't think...
He rides a unicycle!
Right, but just because an idea comes from a 14-year-old, automatically it shouldn't be dismissed, but this one should. That's what my point is.
Okay, that's fine. But shouldn't all ideas that come from 14-year-olds that ride unicycles be discounted?
Okay, I think we could agree on that. No cussing in South Pasadena is the story, and I guess we have a complaint caller on the phone. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's the great Sean Connery. Good morning, Sean.
Hello, Kevin and Bean. How the f*** are you,
okay. Listen, in light of the conversation we just had with the mayor, Mr. Connery, why do you come at us with language like that?
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you fellas, was to talk about the story you were talking about.
Okay.
About this 14-year-old f*** with the tricycle.
He's just trying to clean up the neighborhood. There's no disrespect necessary.
He's a f***ing sucker, first of all.
Right.
And he's infringing upon my First Amendment rights.
Your First Amendment rights?
That's right. Freedom of mother speech.
Well, I don't think that the mayor was saying that you're going to get arrested or anything like that. You can still legally cuss. It's just that they're trying to discourage it.
Why?
Because then you'll stop doing drugs as well.
Yeah, that's shady logic, if you ask me. Listen, is one of the greatest words in the world.
Yeah.
It's multi-purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only way to really, truly express yourself. There's reason this 14-year-old doesn't want to use the word f***. It's because he knows he'll never have an opportunity to use it as a verb.
Aww, that's ugly.
He's never getting laid on his little f***icle.
So there are some times when no other word will do. That's what you're saying, Mr. Connery.
Now, Sean, how often are you in South Pasadena, though? I mean, I don't think this is going to affect you.
Every time I go to see the Rose Parade.
You go to the Rose Parade?
Hey. I love to sit in the stand and say, wow, you did a great job stapling some seeds to a Volvo.
Oh, my God.
Nice job. This parade blows. You people are that's my way I spend my New Year's Day.
And now you can't do that
and
anymore.
And now I can't do it because it's no cussing week.
Yeah.
By the way, who calls it cussing?
I don't know. That's a good question.
What 18th century came up with that idea? Golly gosh, no cussing down by the swimming hole. Let's go to the general store and get some pickles out of the barrel.
Now that you mentioned it, it is weird that they don't use swearing as the term,
I guess. Cussing.
Cussing, yeah.
Yeah, South Pasadena can stick its tongue firmly in my hole.
Okay,
well, please, my
Wow. Listen, as Kevin pointed out, I don't think this is really meant for you. It's really meant more for the residents. And I think the goal is just to start a neighborhood discussion about bad habits that young people get into. That's what the mayor was trying to tell us.
I think we are starting a discussion.
Yeah.
And my half of the discussion is you.
All right, Sean, good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Go
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Any Scientologists out there or the marksmen who work for Scientologists, it's Kevin@krock.com. How dare you. You guys remember a while ago now, shortly before Tom Cruise married his beautiful blushing bride, Katie Holmes, that we heard rumors that there was an audition process, that Katie was not the first choice, that there had actually been, like you were auditioning for a movie, women who were called in to meet with Tom, not about a role, but about being his wife.
Like you made a list and then had them called in?
That's what it
Which Which, by the way, is exactly what I'd do if I could.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Believe me, some of the same people would be on that list. I mean, you don't think I'd be calling Jessica Alba in for an audition?
Sure.
My God. So we heard about that story, and I guess since then it's kind of, you know, died out and then come back. Well, there's a new article this month in the News of the World magazine that quotes a guy in the story who says it is true, who is an ex-Scientologist. He is a former executive producer at the video production company for Scientology. His name is Mark Headley, and I'm very excited to say we've got him on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show right now on K-Rock. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks a lot for joining us. I understand you live here in Southern California. You listen to the show?
That's correct.
Fantastic. How long were you with the Church of Scientology?
I worked at Golden Arrow Productions from 1990 to 2005.
Oh, wow.
That's 15 years.
15 years while we were on the air, and you heard us probably talking about Scientology from time to time.
Well, that's the thing. They don't actually let you listen to K-Rock up there because you guys trash talk. So
yeah, that's a good choice.
Were you lost about five listeners up there.
Were you a Scientologist before you went to work, or did that all happen at the same time?
No, I actually grew up in L.A., and my mother was a Scientologist, and that's how I ended up kind of getting into the fold.
Okay.
Now, I had to mention, because you did say trash talking, and I want to make sure that people who haven't heard us talk about it before understand. Kevin and I both have friends that are Scientologists that we love, that are terrific people. There are lots of really good, decent, nice people in Scientology. There's also a lot of stuff that just seems creepy and stuff that we don't understand that is fascinating to us. This is less to do with religion than it really has to do with secrecy, is where we're coming from, because anytime somebody says it's top secret and you're not allowed to know unless you're on the inside, we want to be on the inside.
Yeah,
we want to find out what's going on.
Totally. And probably every single one of those people that you know that's a Scientologist, they have no idea what happens up there.
Okay, that brings up a good question. So you left in 2005. Why did you leave?
I basically, after 15 years, I saw stuff and heard stuff that I just couldn't believe was happening.
Okay.
And just David Miscavige himself.
That's the guy that runs Scientology?
That's the guy that runs Scientology, who's actually supposedly not the person who runs it, because he's in a totally separate branch that's just supposed to police the trademarks and the copyrights of Scientology,
okay.
But he runs the day-to-day activity.
And it was just stuff you saw that convinced you didn't want to be a part of it?
Yeah,
is that
physical violence,
like
literally mental and emotional torture, things that would blow your mind.
Now, you mentioned a second ago most Scientologists don't know about. What are the numbers? Because it really does seem like if you get down to the top secret stuff, which is Xenu and the volcano and all that kind of stuff, it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, 99% of Scientologists don't know anything about that.
Will they ever?
Yeah, sure. If they cash in and they pay up the fees that they have to know, they'd have to pay to learn all those levels. But you don't find out about Xenu and stuff like that until the upper levels, and so most of your listeners, when they hear the stuff about Xenu or, you know, anything that's not widely known, it's a joke to them. They've never heard of it. And literally, until I left, I was there for 15 years, I never heard the word Xenu once until I left. And then as you get on the internet, and it's practically the first
thing
you
hear. Wait a minute. How do you know then it's not just somebody with an axe to grind if you didn't hear it on the inside?
Because I've read enough things on the internet that I can absolutely...
Dude, but I read on the internet that we attacked on 9/11 ourselves. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. How do you know what to trust and what not to trust?
Because you can tell by what's written if it's written the same way that L. Ron Hubbard writes. Somebody couldn't make something like that up.
What did you see with your own eyes while you were in?
Well, I did see a lot of stuff in his house. They built a... They've built a $30 million mansion in Hemet for L. Ron Hubbard for when he comes back.
There's a $30 million mansion that's just sitting empty waiting for L. Ron Hubbard to come back?
Well, no, it's full. It has all of his clothes in it. It's got...
By the way...
No one lives there.
Yeah, and they set his clothes out for him every day on his bed.
Imagine what you can get for $30 million in Hemet, by the way. We're not talking about Beverly Hills here. In Hemet, $30 million goes a long way.
And also, if you use all your own labor and you don't have to pay for that...
Mark, when do they think L. Ron Hubbard is coming back? Because he did.
Well, he was supposed to come back 21 years after he passed away, which was 2007. So I'm sure there's a lot of people there going, maybe he missed a bus somewhere or something happened. But he was supposed to come back last year.
Can you talk about the abuse that you're talking about? We had heard that they were using kids that were under the age of 18 to work.
Absolutely.
Not letting them go to school.
Yeah, my wife actually knows another girl, Jenna Miscavige, really well. And she was working up there.
She's the daughter of the dude that runs it?
She's the niece.
Niece, okay.
And she started that website, xscientologykids.com.
Oh, right.
And she actually worked out there with about probably, I'd say, another 100 kids at least. And they ranged anywhere from 8 years old to 12 years old. And they were building, you know, stone veneer walls and, you know, building up levees and doing construction and drywall.
I'm happy to hear that. I'm so happy to hear that because kids not in Scientology have gotten so soft, Mark. I mean, we let them play and go to school. It's time for them to start earning their keep. It shouldn't be take, take, take as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, especially out in Hemet in the, you know, 110 degree desert weather. Yeah, you know, that's a good time.
If we had 8-year olds building levees in New Orleans, things would have been a lot different.
That's right, man. You know? Now, Mark, Tom Cruise is the very public face of Scientology. He's done probably as much positive for Scientology as anyone around, and also as much negative in recent years. And you're the guy who actually was the producer of all those videos that have been such viral sensations over the past 6 months?
Yeah, that's right. And those videos, the way they appear, they are not been edited after the fact. That is actually what aired, and that is what played to the Scientologists.
How do you know?
People will tell you different, but those were straight off the DVDs.
How do you think they're getting released?
Various people, I think, that have left.
Is a various person stuff, named Mark Headley?
That take stuff with them, you know, and they got a copy here, a copy there, and they kind of wait.
I see. All right, let me ask you a couple of questions because, again, there's so much speculation because Tom Cruise is such a popular movie star. Everybody, you know, questions what's going on and everybody writes their theories. Is he being groomed somehow to be eventually the head of the Church of Scientology? Could that happen?
I don't think that he's being groomed for it, but I know that he is a carbon copy of Dave Miscavige. If anybody knows Dave Miscavige or who's talked with him, who's worked with him, and then you hear Tom Cruise on the TV or the radio, he is literally, he talks like him now, he acts like him now, his mindset, they're best buds. And hanging out with him over the past, you know, 8 years has absolutely molded Tom into a carbon copy of David Miscavige. And David Miscavige, while I was there, said many times if he could, he would absolutely make Tom Cruise the number two guy. But he can't because Tom Cruise isn't in the Sea organization and he's an actor and blah, 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 blah. But he is the de facto number two guy.
Okay, and by the way, nicest guy in the world. You'll never enjoy your time more with any human on earth than you will with Tom Cruise in terms of the attention that he pays you and the respect that he gives you. He just really seems like a genuinely nice guy, and that is something that he is taught to do.
Totally, and that's the way Dave is too. As long as you're not working with him.
What about the auditions for Tom Cruise's wife?
Yeah, those absolutely went down.
You saw the paperwork or whatever?
We were getting videos every single day. Basically what happened is this also, the first stage of this, by the way, totally unknown by Tom Cruise. Tom is talking to Dave. Tom and Dave talk all the time.
Right.
He calls him up and he's just telling him he can't get hooked up. And one of the reasons, it's not like he just couldn't find a girl. Whatever girl he picks has to be a girl that's going to become a Scientologist.
Right.
He can't date a non-Scientologist.
All right, let me stop you right there. Is that what went wrong with Nicole Kidman after all those years? Is it that was the impasse?
Absolutely. Same thing. That's the exact same thing that happened with Penelope. She didn't want to drop the Buddhism thing, and she wanted to do Scientology and Buddhism and, you know, whatever else she found. She didn't want to, you know, exclusively do one thing.
So you're saying there was an audition for people to play the role of Tom Cruise's wife, but Tom Cruise was not aware of it?
Yeah, this is basically what happened. Tom calls Dave Miscavige, and basically he's yakking in his ear about the problem with the girlfriend. So Dave doesn't tell Tom, okay, I'm gonna hook you up. He says, I get it, okay, fine, you know, we'll see what we can do. And then, sure enough, we get told to pull in all these Scientology actresses for auditions for this movie, and we get given a list of questions we have to ask them. And, you know, we were told, send the tapes up to RTC. which is the Religious Technology Center.
Right.
And so we literally auditioned hundreds of Scientology actresses in the
and
LA
not
area.
Scientology, because Katie Holmes wasn't a Scientologist.
That's right. That whole thing, after all these interviews were done and watched and rejected by Dave, it was basically like, we're not going to get one from within the herd. We need to go
but
outside of
why
the
why was he rejecting them, though, Mark? Like somebody like Erica Christensen, who seems exactly like what you say they were looking for, a young, pretty, popular, in her 20s, already a Scientologist. Why would somebody like that be rejected by David before she even has a chance to meet Tom Cruise?
I don't know. That's Dave.
Okay. All right. So then they widened the search, and
that's when they start looking for
Nana.
He basically says to Tom, hey, if you had a list, what would the list be? And that's where the Jennifer Garner and Jessica
Scarlett
Alba,
Johansson.
Oh, I see.
Scarlett, that's where all those girls show up. And then they start going through there, and that's when the, that's why the story of how, you know, Tom gave her a tiger, that shows up. And, you know, all these other different Scarlett running out of the Celebrity Center in Hollywood.
Okay,
and
did they know that's what they were there for? When Scarlett Johansson shows up at the Scientology Center, does she think she's there to cut an audition tape for a film?
Yeah, I think all of them, they were. It was all under the guise of the MI3 thing. And that's even why a lot of people don't know this, but that's even has to do with why the director for MI3 got dumped. There was another director already lined up, and they'd already set everything up for MI3. And then all of a sudden, he gets dumped, a new director gets picked up, and this new director just happens to be J.J. Abrams. That was all a ploy to try and get into Jennifer Garner's camp.
But is he a Scientologist, J.J. Abrams?
No.
He's connected to Jennifer Garner.
Through alias.
Right. All right, I got you.
So, there's all kinds of backstories.
Mark, we're out of time, unfortunately. If you could tell us the biggest thing that you think people don't realize, what would it be?
That there's a lot of physical and emotional abuse that goes on behind the scenes, and a lot of money, a lot of church parishioner money gets spent on things that are extravagant and insane, and also that L. Ron Hubbard didn't write half the stuff that they're reading.
What do you have a website or something, Mark? Some sort of thing that you might recommend people go to for more information?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you can find out about, like the behind-the-scenes stuff on Operation Clambake, and also on xscientologykids.com, xenu.net. Any of those will basically...
Okay. Well, it's fascinating stuff. Like I said, we always love, if you worked for the Vatican, we'd want to hear about that, too. It's just so interesting to hear the stuff that the public's not supposed to hear. But I'm glad you contacted us, and I'm glad you came on the Kevin and Bean Show on KROQ today, Mark.
Awesome. Thanks.
KROQ, and we are fascinated by people who make more money than all of us combined.
Even if it is only in pesos. Lisa May, what country immediately springs to mind when I tell you this is where the second richest man in the world lives?
Well, I would think in the U.S.,
you are correct. Mexico City, ladies and gentlemen. Mexico City has the second richest man in the world. I'm going to be completely honest and tell you that I'm sure Lightning has admired this guy for years because he loves the billionaires. I never heard of this guy before this week. But Carlos Slim is his name. So it's Bill Gates at number one. And this guy, who apparently made his fortune in wireless telecommunications, is number two. He's worth $53 billion. Okay?
Whoa.
$53
billion. That is unbelievable.
In a country where minimum wage is about 50 cents an hour.
It does seem like he could own Mexico. It just seems like he could literally buy everything in Mexico for $53 billion. But we thought, how crazy is this? And what a unique opportunity we have to talk to the man himself on the phone right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Buenos dias, Kevin and Bean. How are you, man?
We're good. How are you?
Woo! I'm rich, baby. Hey, Chico, I'm rich. Hey!
Is that
good morning to you, man.
Was that a gunshot?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, hey, you like
okay.
That?
Woo!
Why, baby?
Right, but why
are not Chico?
Okay, but why? We like you very much, Mr. Slim. But why are you shooting off a weapon? It seems like that would be dangerous.
Because I can, bitch. Rico, hey, take that. Eh?
Now, there is part of the story that's a little bit troubling. Is that you were criticizing the philanthropy of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett?
Hey, why you give your money away, you pussy? Huh? I work hard for the money. You know what I'm saying?
And you said businessmen can do more good by building solid companies than by, quote, going around like Santa donating money.
That's right, man. You know why? They're weak, man. They're... I came up, made my money on the streets. I sell jigglers, you know. I do the donkey show and I'm a little boy.
No.
You know, there's like 7 years old with the mustache. I'm in Rosarito Beach. I'm in Rosarito Beach. I sell jigglers. And now I make TV and I make money, baby. Yeah!
Okay, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it says here you have Latin America's largest mobile phone company.
That's right. I'm multimedia, baby.
You have banks. You have internet providers. You have oil industry.
Anything you want. Retail stores and restaurants. I'll get you what you want.
All right.
But here's what I don't understand, senor.
I got chicken too, bitch. I got chicken. You want chicken, Chico?
No, thank you.
We don't need a chicken.
I'm rich.
But
bitch.
Here's, I think, what Kevin was asking is, why are Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, why are they, to put it in your words, pussies for trying to improve the world by giving money away? I mean, they're using their money to help you know, cure diseases, get clean water to Africa, and they're doing a lot of good with it.
Because, Chico, you want to know what I do with my money?
Right.
Let me see here. Look at this Dodger blanket I got, eh?
You have a Dodger blanket?
It's so warm. I was cold, now I'm warm.
But how much money?
It's got Dodgers on it, eh?
Don't they give that away free, sir?
Hey, whatever.
Okay. Yeah, but
I
with
got
50.
A 1983 Nissan Mini truck, huh? I just put a huge mural on it where I'm dressed like an Aztec and there's a waterfall hitting my head and my girlfriend, my highness, next to me and she's got bullets covering her chiches. It's beautiful.
But with $50 billion, you could buy the company that makes the car. You don't just have to buy a beat-up used car. You could do so much more with that money.
Hey, I'm Mexican. I got $50 billion, no credit. You know what I'm saying? Universal City, Nissan, what can I do? Hey, man, you know what I'm saying? I got a floor-to-ceiling stained glass window with the Virgin Mary. In a Raider jersey! Hey!
In a Raider jersey? That does sound impressive. Wow.
Yeah.
You sound like you're quite out of breath, sir.
Hey, I'm rich.
Yeah?
I'm fat.
Okay.
Hey, I talk about my hair now. I got the mural on my truck.
Uh-huh.
I bought that bitch lifetime supply of press-on nails, hairspray, and eyebrow pencil.
That doesn't sound like it's putting.
Chico.
That doesn't sound like much of a dent in your wealth.
There's eyebrow pencils all over the house. It's amazing. You want to do an eyebrow? I said, walk over there. Mira, look, an eyebrow pencil right there, everywhere. Right here, look at me, find one. Look at that. Oh, eyebrow pencil in my hand.
Well, you're living the big life. I'll tell you that.
Huge tattoo, Mr. Cartoon, come down with a tattoo on me.
Oh, you got cartoon.
My mom in her baptism dress.
Right.
Holding two guns, doing the L.A. Dodgers sign with her fingers. Her nails are like 3 inches long.
That's a hell of a tattoo.
I pay the Gap Man and Rolls Royce to live in my house and play me do a song all day.
Is that right?
You know, Drew Barton is playing for me.
They live with you.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm living the life, Chico. And I tell you what, man. I got a pool in my backyard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I go swimming, you know what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah.
I bought 15 pair of Levi's so I can go swimming every day.
You don't have a swimsuit?
Why don't you wear a swimsuit?
That's what you wear in the pool, right? In the water, you wear Levi's.
Levi's? No.
But no, what you doing?
You're wearing board
Mexican
shorts. Or...
No. You go in the water, you need a Levi's.
Okay.
All right. Maybe the Dickies.
And it sure sucks to be on the bottom of the ladder, doesn't it?
Due to the graphic nature of this program, parental discretion is advised.
Let me add.
And a warning here. We're dealing with a sensitive subject, which is not suitable for young children.
And perhaps one more.
This program contains images which may be disturbing to younger or sensitive viewers. Parental discretion is advised.
Although this was on the news.
This is a newscast
from Idaho Falls.
If you missed it yesterday, we got an update here, and the reporter you'll hear in the story standing by to speak with us on the phone as we explore what's going on with the phantom pooper.
Well, we live in eastern Idaho, where it's not hard to go outside and get a breath of fresh air.
But one local neighborhood can barely breathe because of a disgusting, gross, vile stench in the air.
Jolynn, that's right. I wanted to see what all this stink was about. Phew, and boy, did I find out. Now, I do have to warn you. What I found was disgusting, so if you have a queasy stomach, you might want to look away during parts of this.
A phantom pooper is taking a squat just out back of one Idaho Falls neighborhood.
If the wind blows the right direction, you can smell it through our back door.
Okay, so this is a reporter now who's going out and asking people about the phantom pooper.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Take it a squat.
Catch the person, though. I think it's disgusting and he should be put in jail.
Yes.
Here's the scoop on the poop. The city has gotten so many calls about the phantom pooper, they've set up a pooper stakeout to see if they could catch him doing his business.
But from what I understand, they still haven't caught him yet, even though they've they've staked out the area and sat and watched, they still haven't caught up with him yet.
Okay, now here's where she recaps kind of what we know.
Here are the clues to the Phantom Pooper's identity as we know them. His preferential place to leave a log is under the Lindsay Boulevard overpass. He fancies himself a bit of a Rembrandt.
Now, here's my favorite part. He fancies himself a bit of a Rembrandt. Listen to this.
You know, I don't know why they'd want to finger paint with it.
But... Oh, come on. All right. Well, the voice on the tape is the voice on the phone here at K-Rock right now. Let's welcome KIDK Channel 3 reporter Mary Sturgill to the Kevin and Bean Show. Good morning, Mary. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
What a great assignment. You're so lucky.
This is what you went to college for, right, Mary? This is it.
Yeah, it was an incredible assignment. Never in a million years did I think I'd ever have to cover that.
The Phantom. Did you have a meeting in the morning where you go over the stories and somebody gets assigned to each story and they said Phantom Pooper Mary?
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. One of the reporters brought the story in from one of her sources and it got dumped on me.
So it's
dumped on me. Yeah.
She can't stop.
Mary, where did the name the Phantom Pooper come from? Was that you?
No, that was actually the group. He's actually called the Phantom Defecator. So we softened it up
a little bit. Oh,
okay, wow.
I'm shocked that you softened anything up. Your newscast has got stinky and squat and leaving a log.
It took a long time to find all those different ways to say that.
Yeah, well, no kidding. How many people did you interview?
We interviewed two people, the two people that appeared, actually three people, sorry about that. We interviewed three people, two of them appeared in the piece.
Right.
And then some city officials who, you know, probably didn't want to appear in the piece.
Well, of course not. Nobody wants to appear in a piece on a Phantom Pooper.
Exactly.
Why did your station, by the way, thank God for the YouTube. I mean, obviously we wouldn't know about this report in Idaho Falls, Idaho, if it hadn't been for the YouTube. But
right. Why
did your station spend so much time on this story and go into such detail?
Well, when my news director came to me with the story, we talked about how to do it, and we wanted to make it funny. And, you know, we cover, you know, sex offenders and all the horrible news of the day, and we wanted to make this light and funny because, you know, the funniest thing is, you know.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Yeah, we know.
Right. We gotcha.
Yeah, so we wanted to make it light and funny, and I did talk him into moving the piece to 10 o'clock, so it's not during the dinner hour at 6 o'clock.
Right.
So, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but what about this? I mean, we're all familiar with poop, yet you do go into probably more detail than is necessary for the average viewer. When you start talking about, when you got that interview with the guy talking about the finger painting, does it need to be on camera? Isn't the image already burned into the brain just when you hear that he smeared it all over the wall? I mean, do we need to see it?
I think it's TV. You have to see something, and that's the topic of the day.
So. You know, I don't know why they'd want to finger paint with it, but...
Come on. All right, did they catch the Phantom Pooper?
No, he is still on the loose.
He's still at large.
Yeah.
Is the theory that this is a statement he's making, or is he a homeless guy? He just doesn't have a place to go, or does he have some sort of mental illness? What are the theories behind it?
There are lots of theories. The main theory, I think, is that it's a homeless person, or if you look at video, there's so much of it. It's got to be more than one person, I think.
Yeah.
But,
really?
Oh,
so then you have a copycat Phantom Pooper?
I think we do. And since I did the story, I found out that it happens all across the nation.
Mary, you know what's really weird about this is it does happen all across the nation.
Yeah.
And we had this problem for about 6 months.
Yep.
Where it would happen clearly away from the toilet.
In our studio, at the radio station.
And there were people like trying to catch who it was. And somebody reported that he saw blue shoes. And we were checking everybody for blue shoes. I mean, how common is this?
Apparently, it's very, very common. One gentleman in the piece talked, he owns a campground. And he's in connection with campgrounds all across the country. And apparently, it happens in every campground across the country. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have, by the way, if you're just joining us, Mary Sturgill is on the line. She is a very fine reporter in Idaho Falls, Idaho for Channel 3 there. We're talking about the Phantom Pooper story that we brought you yesterday. There's a woman in the piece, I don't know if we have the tape available, who talked about how she could understand if the guy pooped once. All right, everybody gets a pass when you got to go.
Right.
And then she starts going into all this detail about how you can kind of feel it coming on and you ought to be able to plan better ahead. I mean, there's been more investigative reporting from your station in Idaho Falls on the Phantom Pooper than we've had
had in all of the war of Iraq. I mean, it's unbelievable the resources you put into this story.
And you know what? It's the story people are talking about.
All right, let me ask
it's what
you.
What people want to know about, apparently.
It is. It's the first time we've had you on. Let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
You see occasionally a TV show where there are a bunch of fires being started and the fireman shows up and he's the hero. And it turns out the fireman was setting the fires so he could be the hero.
Interesting.
What are you suggesting,
Mary?
Kevin?
Are you the phantom? Are you the phantom pooper?
No, I am not.
And then you go out and interview people about it.
Exactly. No, I'm not. But we have had several emails, people claiming that they were the phantom pooper.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And several websites out there, if you check some of them, Bitbart, things like that, have people talking about who they think it is, and it's just so funny.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What is the if they find the phantom pooper? What will the charge be against him? What law is being broken here?
Well, this is the thing. I talked to several people about that, and basically the only thing they can charge him with is a misdemeanor of maybe indecent exposure, depending on how in the act they caught him.
Right.
You know, or, you know, disturbing the peace, maybe.
So oh, disturbing your peace? Nothing. I'm going to go out and start doing that. That's fantastic.
You know, because people walk out and they have this horrible smell, so they're disturbing their peace.
Wow.
I guess, yeah. Well, this has to be among your favorite stories you've ever done since you've been on TV, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, it's the funniest.
You sound like you have a good sense of humor. Do you call your relatives or somebody and say, listen to the story I'm on today?
Absolutely, I did.
Fantastic.
Well, so we're going to be keeping our...
You're not going to believe what I've come to.
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to be keeping our eyes peeled on YouTube for an update, and I'm sure from time to time you guys revisit the story on Channel 3, right?
Yeah, we're working on that. We're working on it.
10-piece series on it.
All right. Fantastic. Hey, wait till 60 Minutes picks this one up, man. Look out. All right. It's KDIC Channel 3 in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Mary Sturgill is the reporter. Thank you so much for joining us on the Kevin Bean Show. We've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I just have one other question.
You know, I don't know why they'd want to finger paint.
If there's one thing that we've learned through the years, it's that if you drink to excess, good things will always happen. We took a call a few days ago on What to Do Nephew from a girl, and she was telling us a little story about how somebody had broken into her house.
I woke up yesterday to find a 24-year-old girl sleeping on my couch.
Do you know who it is?
I had no idea who this person was. She apparently wandered into my house drunk last night, like the night before.
Right.
I called the cops. I called the cops, and they tell me that I'm supposed to, like, since I live near clubs, it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, they told her, you know, you live right next to a club. I mean, that's just going to happen.
Expect?
What do you expect?
Sure.
Now, here's my problem with that story. You don't call the cops.
No.
If there's a chick sleeping on your couch and you're a girl, you say, don't sleep on the couch. There's
you
no
don't have to sleep on that couch.
Right.
No, it's okay. No, it's not. No. This is a huge bed. Come on, just get in and get a good night's sleep.
Here's my question, and maybe I should direct this towards Psycho Mike, since I'm sure this has happened to him countless times back in his drinking days. But if you're really so effed up that you don't realize you're trying to get into somebody else's house, how do you get in? I mean, how do you get past the locked door or window or whatever it is to end up on somebody else's couch?
That's always – I mean, that type of stuff happens in a blackout state, always, 100% of the time. And you don't remember from like 7 p.m. on. And next thing you know, it's 7 a.m. the next morning. You're like, how am I in Long Beach in this guy's house?
You
I don't
even
know
why. Got in
I, don't,
the house.
I didn't drive here. I don't remember being anywhere near. You know, that's just the way it is.
And Mike ended up in cities that he didn't even know how he got to. It wasn't just the house.
That's the truth. One of the worst times was waking up in a guy's front lawn that I didn't know in Long Beach. The sprinklers woke me up. And the last thing I really remember was being in Hollywood with my friends.
Dude. Oh,
and I don't remember know how I got in like the Long Beach area. I don't know how I got there. Luckily, all my like my wallet, my keys, and everything were still in my pockets, and no one robbed me or anything.
But if your friends were funny, that's what I would have done. Just taken you to some random house in another city and dropped you off on the lawn.
Well, we could get into what's happened to me in Europe and stuff, but we don't. That's when you're
laying in a yard and you get woken up by the sprinklers in the morning. That's got to feel like a new low when it happens to you. It just has to.
That's one of those times when you swear you'll never drink again.
Yeah.
And then like at 5 p.m. that night, you're.
Yeah, of course. You got to take some more. All right. So let's say good morning to Crikey. Good morning, Crikey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Crikey works here at K-Rock. He's a phone op for Jed. And this happened to you recently?
Yeah, it was Halloween.
Halloween, okay.
And I went to a party in the 909.
Sure.
And I was dressed in German lederhosen.
All right, because it's Halloween, okay.
Right, and wandered away from the party because, well, I wanted to use the bathroom and there was a line.
Sure.
And went out front, got lost, couldn't find my way back, ended up wandering through the streets, got a ride with a stranger.
Right.
Ended up back near, kind of close to where the party was because I saw my car and I figured I would have parked in front of the house where the party was going. But
right.
I had actually parked about four doors down. And went up to the front door. It was unlocked. Walked in. Couldn't find my way back out once I realized it was the wrong house.
Okay, so this was a house that was four houses down from where you were originally partying.
Exactly.
And your car was in front of it. So you walked inside. What do you mean you couldn't find your way back out?
I got to, like, the living room and realized, you know, well, hold on, this is the wrong place.
Right.
And in my drunken haze, just didn't know where the front door was.
So you couldn't get out, so you just laid down?
Well, no. First, I used their phone to try and call my friends.
Okay.
I used their phone in the kitchen because Lederhosen don't have pockets.
Okay.
So I had no ID. I didn't have my cell phone.
Right.
But that didn't work because nobody picked up when I called. So then I curled up on the couch and took a nap.
Was anyone home at the house that you broke into?
Well, about an hour later, I was woken up by a middle-aged woman who was just screaming at the top of her lungs.
Because you probably scared the hell out of her.
Well, yeah. I mean, I looked like a drunken Keebler elf curled up on the couch. But, I did my best to calm her down. I just looked her in the face, and I said, ma'am, please, you're making a fool of yourself.
I'm sorry, wait a minute. She's making a fool of herself.
Well, the best part is I said, you really need to calm down and get out of my house.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not Omar. It's not like usually as soon as alcohol touches my lips, I make a fool of myself.
Right.
It was like I'm usually a guy with a certain amount of class, but this night I just went out of control.
This was exceptional. All right.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Yep.
And my favorite part of that story is that he was accusing her of being in his house. How dare you, woman?
That's brilliant.
You get out of my house. How do you like that?
He should be all confused.
He may have thought he was in his house.
Let's go to Tom in Riverside. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, what's up?
You were breaking into people's houses?
Well, like, I was with my friends, and I'm not in a fraternity, but they are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we all got kind of wasted a little bit too much one night. And so I freaking passed out in this guy's house. And I wake up, and it's this old guy, and he's all, oh, do you want anything to eat?
Well, wait a minute.
Really?
Is this with someone you didn't know?
Yeah, I didn't know him. I just woke up in his house.
Okay, so, when you woke up, he asked you if you wanted something to eat.
Yeah, he's all, you want some coffee, orange juice? He's all, I made you some toast. He's all, I have Fruit Loops, and he's all, the remote's right there if you want to watch some TV.
Yeah.
That's what's going on here. He thought it was his lucky day.
And then did he take you to the bedroom?
No, I hope not.
How about that? What a strange difference of reactions from the woman the last call, freaking out, didn't know what to do. This guy's making him breakfast.
I know. I think he was lonely.
Wow, Tom.
He's like, you can watch what you want on TV. Just lock the door behind you. I'm going to head out to work.
What?
Oh, my God.
Left
you there?
Wow. I hope you took everything he had. I mean...
That is some real hospitality, man. You were somebody's boy toy. Congratulations.
You don't see that every day, do you? Hey, lock up before you go.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's talk to Sean on line 7. Sean is down in Chino, and this is how you want to wake up. Sean, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Sean K-Rock. Go ahead.
What's going on, guys?
So you woke up at somebody else's house.
Yeah, I was at a party at my buddy's house, and I got really plastered and walked out front and thought I walked back into the house. Well, what happened was I had walked into his neighbor's house,
right,
and their grandmother lived there.
Right.
And I had walked in, kind of took my shoes off, noticed that nobody was really partying anymore, figured the party had gotten broken up. So I walked into what I thought was the room I was staying in and crawled into bed, and there was somebody in bed. So I figured, you know, it looked like some lady.
It's my lucky night.
You know, my lucky night. And I get in there, and I crawl into bed, and I kind of spoon up next to her. And all of a sudden, she flips out and she starts screaming. And I realize it's an old lady. It was my neighbor's grandmother.
Oh, my God. You spooned your neighbor's grandmother.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Because, like, when she saw me, like, I have a bunch of piercings in my face. I have full sleeves and, like, a big pat on my neck and stuff.
So Grandma didn't appreciate that much?
Grandma did not appreciate that very much. So I freaked out, hopped up, ran out the house.
went back into my buddy's house, and they're like, where'd you go? I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. And I fell asleep on the couch. Well, the next morning, the police showed up at the house, and they're knocking on the door. My buddy Connor walks to the door, and he opens up the door, and the cop is like, do you have a friend with a lot of tattoos and piercings? And he was like, he's all, well, yeah, I do. He's right here. His name's Sean. Like, I walk over to the door and kind of hang my head down, and I hadn't told anybody, so the cop was like, did you go next door last night? And,
you should have said yes, and she was magic.
Cute. Morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi, everybody.
Mike took the bullet yesterday and went down. You cruised on by the Ryan Seacrest, star of the Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony that was happening?
Sure did. And very appropriate that it was in West Hollywood.
Now, is it true? First of all, I have two things before we find out your observations. One is I heard on Access Hollywood yesterday, I swear to God this is what they said. I haven't independently researched it. Robert Redford doesn't have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? No star for Julia Roberts, no star for George Clooney.
Wow.
However, Ryan Seacrest now has a star on the sidewalk.
Right where he got his star was right next to Tony Curtis, Frank Sinatra.
Oh, people we've heard of that actually had careers?
Kermit the Frog, Groucho Marx, Greta Garbo. These are the people Ryan Seacrest was wedged between.
You're kidding.
Wow. Is that not an atrocity?
Yes, it's an atrocity. And again, I want people to realize that just because we are competing with him, we don't think we should be there either.
Right.
Like the Kevin and Bean, we don't deserve a star there either, because that's for superstar actors and actresses. It's not for little DJs.
Tony Curtis and Groucho Marx and the kinds of people and Julia Roberts and George Clooney, for God's sake.
The way I look at it, that is one of the biggest tourist attractions in all of Los Angeles. So when people are coming from all around the world to come to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, they should see people that they all recognize.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they don't, if they start filling it up with the Ryans of the world, then people are just going to go, well, this is nothing. There's nobody here I recognize.
I heard that Chris, the fired apprentice from last week, is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, it's true.
It just becomes worthless.
And number two was, is it true that there were a lot of people down there to see the presentation?
Psycho Mike's estimate would be about 1,000 people.
Psycho Mike's estimate would be that?
Yes.
Did you ask him? That's what he said?
I had a talk with him in the other studio before I came in.
That's a huge turnout. It seems to me.
I was worried that I was going to get down there. It wasn't going to be enough people to talk to.
Right.
And it was a major going on.
Okay.
So it was a big deal. And it really bugged me because, like, I've always wanted to be in show. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I've always wanted to be in show business. And I've always wanted to be in comedy. And just a guy who just doesn't have a modicum of talent to go up there and everybody's patting him on the back and giving him this type of acclaim really got under my skin. But, you know, I certainly – there were plenty of people there that loved him, and I got to talk to a lot of them. What has Ryan Seacrest done that's so special that he deserves a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
And he makes American Idol to me.
So it's not the talent of the singers or the performances, it's the host.
For me, yes. Well, he's very talented.
Okay, you know, you said he's very talented. What are some of the things he's done to exhibit talent?
Just the way that he holds himself on television, I think, is really good. So he knows what he's talking about. He's really professional.
You think he's cute?
Oh, yeah.
Who's better looking, him or me? Seriously.
Ryan, definitely.
Go f*** yourself.
Sorry.
Now, from a gay man's point of view, do you find him attractive?
Yeah, I do. I like the boy next door type.
Gay men tend to have a little bit more of an astute gay radar. What does yours indicate when you're around Ryan?
I don't think he's gay.
You don't think so?
I just don't get that from him. I think he's just a straight guy who's really into his looks.
Are you a big Ryan Seacrest fan?
Yes.
What makes you such a big fan of him?
He's a wonderful host.
And you think he makes the show? You think he actually contributes to the show's success?
Yes.
What are some of your other favorite television shows?
Joan of Arcadia, the George Lopez show.
You have fantastic taste in television.
Thank you.
What are you doing here?
I'm here to see Ryan get a star, of course.
What are some things he does as the host of American Idol that makes him so special?
Well, I like that he's so genuine. I think that's the biggest thing, that he's just a real person.
Yeah, because when I think Ryan Seacrest, the first thing that comes into my mind is genuine.
I don't know him, but...
I do. He's a terrible man. And it's only fitting that it's on Hitler's birthday that he gets his star here on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Gosh, that's horrible.
What are you doing out here honoring Seacrest?
I love him. I just want to give him a bubble bath.
Do you think this is deserved, him getting a star here?
I think he deserves this because he's worked his way up.
What do you like about Ryan? What personally draws you to him? What makes you a fan?
His fresh face, his ability to talk.
Excuse me, I think you just said his ability to talk.
He can dress well.
He does. Yeah, the guy dresses well. for a homo. Are you a big Ryan fan?
Ryan actually raises money for the hospital that these kids are patients at.
Do these children stay at the psychiatric ward of the hospital because they are Ryan Seacrest fans? Are you a big Ryan Seacrest fan?
Yes, I am.
Watch American Idol every week?
Every week.
What does Ryan do that makes you such a big fan of him?
He's very likable. He's a very friendly person.
He's very friendly. Have you ever met him in person?
No, it's the first time I've ever seen him.
So you're assuming he's a nice guy and that he's friendly?
Well, he appears very friendly on TV, yeah.
Are you heterosexual?
Straight. I'm very straight.
You still proudly admit that you're a Ryan Seacrest fan, huh?
Yeah.
All right, good for you, man. You're a big Ryan fan?
I'm impressed with him, yeah. I think he does a very good job.
Do a very good job at what?
At emceeing.
Emceeing American Idol?
Yes.
You think he really contributes a lot to the success of the show, or is that just mostly the talent that they showcase?
Both. Yes, I do. I think he does.
If someone else were to host that show, say Jimmy Kimmel, would you still be such a big fan of American Idol?
No, I would not.
And why is that?
Because I think Ryan really makes it.
If someone sliced up his face with like a razor blade and he's really ugly, would you still like him just as much?
Yes, I would.
Do you listen to him on the radio?
Yes.
And what do you think?
He's very good.
He's the best broadcaster in Los Angeles, right?
Yes.
Oh, easily.
Mm-hmm.
Much better than, say, Kevin and Bean?
Yeah.
Oh, easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the bits he does on the radio that you really like?
Well, you know, he introduced the people who made the top 40. I like how he does that.
Yeah, because that takes a lot of talent. You know, it takes an exceptional person to do that, right?
Yes.
Are you on any medication today?
No.
Have you been drinking?
No.
Has anybody ever used the word mongoloid or retard around you?
No.
Thanks a lot, dude.
All right.
Oh, God.
Mike.
Yes.
Just because Ryan's retarded doesn't mean all of his fans are.
I'm just checking.
Or
I'm
does it?
He's just checking, that's all.
So he got that for his radio work? Because not one person there mentioned his radio work.
Listen to me. He got the star on the Walk of Fame for his radio work, and it had nothing to do with American Idol.
Uh-huh. That's so funny.
So
no radio fans there, really?
You people, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever with that one.
We're out.
I just, it seemed like a surreal, like a parallel universe.
Well, that was a job well done. Thank you.
Beans, blog, beans, blog, beans, blog.
Take it if you know it.
Come on.
Beans, blog, beans, blog, beans, blog. Beans, blog, beans, blog. No one gives a fuck.
Why are you hating on Beans' blog today? What's up?
Bean is, has been a cranky old man since the day he was born.
Oh, clearly,
when
yes.
He was 1 year old, cranky old man. 10 year old, cranky old man.
I don't like those hijinks.
Cranky, not fun, doesn't like people, negative, loves death,
yes.
Loves it when people die.
Wants to read all about it.
But he's also like a 9 year old girl at the same time. And that's why in Bean's blog, he titles April 25th the intro, and it's a picture of his dog licking a birthday cake. And Bean labels it, "Someone is nine."
Oh, God, oh.
Like he's eight, right?
God.
Who could this? Somebody's nine.
Excuse me, Tater Tot Friday, very popular feature on my blog.
I'd like to focus, first of all, hang on.
Beans blog, beans blog, no one gives a fuck.
I'd like to focus for a second, though, on the people who respond to Beans blog. I do this.
My cherished and beloved readers.
These people need to all die because not only are they reading a post where a dude says, "Someone's nine," they are then commenting on it. They're taking the time to send a comment.
Yes.
Michelle writes, "Happy birthday to Tater Tot."
Aw, how
that's
sweet.
That's very sweet.
That's
very
sweet.
Nice.
Except for Tater doesn't know it. Nor can you say happy birthday to Tater Tot because he doesn't understand that.
Right.
Leela writes, "Belated birthday greetings, Tater Tot. You've aged so well. What's your secret?"
She's a good-looking nine. I will tell you that.
That's not the point. The point is, who has the time to sit down and write that? I'd like to form a message to Tater Tot. How do you look so young?
They've all agreed to be in Bean's little pretend land.
Yes.
They've all bought a ticket.
Yes. It's bad enough that it's Bean's little pretend land. These people are going along for the ride.
They are happily entering.
Who are they?
It's sad.
L.A. writes, "I love how Tater is licking the yummy goodness of the cake while keeping a cautious eye on the fire. Her mama didn't raise no dummy."
Oh, my.
Honestly.
Bean.
You're so gay.
Doesn't that make you hate the people that respond to Bean's blog?
You should hate everyone who reads your blog.
No, I am very appreciative that they take the time to read and occasionally comment on the subject matter.
Bean's blog, no one
gives a fuck. I'm saying they don't care either. They're just playing along with your little... I don't know that Bean's not making it up, by the way. Because he's crazy.
I guarantee him not. Look, Tater Tot Friday is a very popular feature. On the blog, which, by the way, is stronglywordedletter.com, if you want to check it out, there is a link through the Kevin Bean section.
Room's starting to spin real fast because of gayness.
I do cover a wide variety of topics. And I challenge you, Kevin, as you prepared for this feature of Bean's blog, I challenge you to tell me the truth. Tell me there wasn't at least something on the blog that you perused that you thought was interesting or you're glad you read.
No, I didn't. I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for absurd, and it just was jumping out at me like crazy. It was just like page after page of nutty craziness.
Yeah.
May 26th, for example, this little piggy. It's not uncommon around my house to talk about piggies. After all, Sophie and Godzilla are both 11 this summer. And then he goes on, blah, blah, blah. This weekend, somehow I got thinking about the nursery rhyme, This Little Piggy, and it sort of confused me a bit. And then Bean goes on a full-page rant about This Little Piggy, the nursery rhyme. I challenge you to tell me who that's interesting to.
I just think that it's one of those things that everyone learns, everyone sings as a little kid growing up, but when you really stop and look at the lyrics, when you talk about how some of the piggies have some and some don't, and some of the piggies are eating roast beef, and that's kind of creepy, like, how is that happening? And the fact that you can't sing This Little Piggy to a pig because they don't have toes and fingers. I mean, that to me is just ironic.
No! It's not so about pigs.
So Lisa, he says...
It's for little kids' toes.
This little piggy went to the market. I get the feeling it's not the supermarket and he's not shopping.
Oh my God.
The second little piggy stayed home and I'm fine with that. The third little piggy had roast beef. The fourth little piggy had none. That's the heartbreaker of the story. So he goes through and he takes this little piggy apart.
Why?
As if it's about pigs.
Spend 5 minutes.
As if it's about pigs.
But this little piggy that goes to market, isn't that kind of a creepy thing to put in a children's nursery rhyme? Is it basically the pig is being raised and then slaughtered? I don't know.
I didn't think of that.
No, that's the meaning. That's the accurate meaning, Bean, is that the pig is getting slaughtered. That's the.
What do you think it means when the pig goes to market?
You douchebag. It's about the kid's toes or something. I don't know. It's not about a pig. What's wrong with you?
That's what the song is saying. It's saying the pig is going to market, meaning the pig is going to be slaughtered. Maybe I'm just saying that's a creepy thing to put in a kid's story.
Okay, guy that doesn't understand human civilization.
Maybe he's going to the supermarket.
That's exactly what I wrote, is I doubt he's going to the supermarket because pigs aren't going to shop.
You're so gay.
It's very unsettling.
Not eat roast beef either,
not
I
don't
idiot.
Like it.
Not bad enough that Bean wrote it. Raul answered and commented on it.
Oh, Raul.
I never broke apart this nursery rhyme before. Kudos for doing it, Bean. Anna writes, how funny. I was singing this song to my niece last week and realized I never truly thought about the words to the song. Poor piggy.
Oh, no.
And it goes on and on.
I'm just saying.
June 2nd, 2008, a beautiful Monday in the neighborhood. Over the weekend, I received that always forwarded stupid email about the late, great Mr. Rogers, secret pass. He's a sniper. He's got tattoos down his sleeve. It's stupid. Bean goes on. But then he says, I remember reading a piece about Fred Rogers on mentalfloss.com last year that is actually worth sharing. It was called 15 Reasons Why Mr. Rogers Was the Best Neighbor Ever. I'll repeat three of them for you here.
Because he's got it memorized.
So he talks about how he used to always drive an Impala, so that was great because he was always whatever, blah, blah, blah.
No, the story was that the car
don't
got
care,
stolen,
care,
and then
no
when the
cares.
News and then when
cares.
The news revealed
how are you
that
mistaking?
It was
no one cares.
Because
nobody
the,
cares.
The point isn't
but
that he
I'm
drove
saying
an Impala.
No one cares.
The point is
but
when
my
the
point
media
is no one cares.
Reported that his Impala
that
was
nobody
stolen.
Cares.
Then the thieves
no
brought
one
it back.
Cares.
The thieves left a note on the dashboard that said we wouldn't have stolen this car if we didn't know it was yours. That's a great story.
Do not
That's
care.
A pretty cool.
Don't care.
That's a pretty cool story.
That was point one. Point two is that Mr. Rogers allegedly kept his weight at a very specific weight, 143 pounds. Why, you ask, Lisa?
Why?
He found beauty in the number 143. Mr. Rogers came to see that number as a gift because, as he says, the number 143 means I love you.
How?
It takes one letter to say I. Four letters to say love, and three letters to say you.
Oh, my God.
143.
No. Mr. Rogers was awesome.
Oh.
Heather writes, I will never be as great a person as Mr. Rogers. You well, got that right, Heather.
Will. None of
you
us will.
You dumb bitch whore.
How dare you.
Sunny Days writes, thanks for posting this, Bean. It makes you realize how few exceptionally good people there are in the world and how we should all strive to make ourselves better people.
I hate her.
I hate all of these people. Geo writes, Mr. Rogers did the one thing most of us needed to be more of, not just lend an ear, but truly listen.
It's a good lesson. It's a good message for the kids right there.
JRD writes, in the time since I've read that article on mental flaws, I've striven, I don't know how you say that, to be a little more like him. And it's not easy to be a good to the core person like that. And then he goes on about how he thinks he'll never be able to reach that.
I think Mr. Rogers Anna just makes writes, you think when you see it.
Thanks,
some of
Bean.
Stuff.
I must say my favorite is he washed his figure to the pound. So cute.
No.
God.
Kathy writes, every once in a while, I will come across Mr. Rogers on PBS, and I love that show just as much as I did when I was a kid. 143, Bean.
It's very sweet.
Aww.
No. We need to drop a bomb. We need to figure out a way to selectively target people that are on this blog.
I'm with you.
And
I'll
anybody
you.
That hits respond or comment needs to die.
I'll help you.
Sometimes you see my blog and you enjoy it, Lisa.
Occasionally you will point out something that I should read or a picture I should look
but
at.
But you can't get away from the 143
cuteness,
means I love you bullshit.
Sweetness crap.
Sorry.
And you,
cursed.
By the way.
Sorry.
You're like the worst. Like, you just grind people
right.
on the show into dust and there you are on your blog.
Right.
143.
He's being a little cute 8-year-old girl.
Come on.
You effing bitch.
Faker.
I did the history of the Iron Lung recently, which I thought was fascinating.
No way.
You're the most rude,
you
angry, hurtful person I've ever met in my life. Just let him die, you told the little kid. You told the mom about his little kid. You said some of that to a human.
That little kid had too many surgeries. It was getting pointless at that. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
I love you.
You are.
This is finally the best reason, the best, most solid justification I've heard for the internet.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate
that. I wonder who the Muslim decorator is.
I love the fact that there is porn for whatever turns you on. Whatever your style is, whatever your interest is. If you like the hairy women, there's porn for that. If you like bald guys, there's porn for that. There's pretty much everything. And we got a press release across our desk the other day, Lisa. I don't know if you saw this or not. But there is an independent porn studio in the San Fernando Valley that is going to start making Muslim-themed porn.
Really?
The guy says sexually active men have much better and more positive things to do than hack off heads, blow people up, and generally try to F things up. If Muslim men would just take off dresses and bomb belts, rip the veils and panties off their women, and take a little, I could say that, the world would be a much more peaceful place.
I see. The theory is they're just so repressed.
Yes.
That it's coming out in these socially unacceptable ways.
Yes.
Exactly. That's what
murder
he is
and mayhem.
Suggesting.
So right. He's doing hardcore Islam, a love story. He's doing Spring Break in Mecca. He's doing Islam rated XXX, and he is doing Medina Ghetto Hoochie Mama.
It seems like a great idea. I like his theory.
That's what he's doing.
I don't know he'll survive the week, but
the problem is you try to sell porn in some Muslim communities, it seems like you're asking for it. It seems it's not going to be received well. So we asked Lightning to do a little bit of research. He was not able to get this producer on the line for us, but we learned in the process of discovery that guy's not the only guy making porn for this Muslim community. And he has lined up for us producer Abdul Al-Jizwadi, who is the producer with Muhammad's Mamas, is the line of DVDs that he has out in stores. Mr. Al-Jizwadi, good morning. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
How you doing, babies? How you doing today, babies?
We're very good, thank you.
We're fine.
Good to hear you, babies. A good day for you, babies.
Now, where do you... Are you in the San Fernando Valley as well?
No, my friend. I'm in Baghdad.
Oh, you're in Iraq.
Yes, we've heard the story about the Americans making Islamic porn films. It's like, why should they make all the money?
I see. Okay. Okay.
Generate their own adult entertainment so the Iraqis can make some money, babies.
See, I would have thought, Abdul, that the Muslim people would be upset about this.
Of course they are, but a buck's a buck, you know?
Okay.
Look, a fella's got to make couscous when he can, you know what I'm saying?
Now, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, sir, but I imagine the joke would be all you have to do is, is show some elbow and you've got some hot stuff for the Muslim community because the women are so covered up in much of the world.
That's funny, babies. Yeah, that's very funny. No, we're going hardcore, babies.
Hardcore.
We want to show Islamic community that sex is a healthy, natural thing, and you can look at some hot porn and really have a good time.
Have you started producing movies yet, or you just...
We've got about 20 different titles already ready for distribution, my babies.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
Like what?
First of all, we've got two big porn stars, first Iraqi porn stars.
Okay.
They'll be starring in all of our product.
Okay, what are their names?
We have Fatima Lynn.
Yes.
Who's a very beautiful Iraqi woman. Uh-huh. And her partner, Al Jazeera.
His porn name is Al Jazeera?
Al Jazeera, yes. The two of them make magic babies. They're incredible together.
Okay.
The first one they put it together, we put it together, amazing film, a holiday film, holiday classic, we think.
Mm-hmm.
Ramadan or Ramadan?
Well, that sounds good. I think
very
I might watch that.
It's very hot.
Yeah, it sounds okay. Like
it. Up with our next feature film, which is incredible, called Hezbollah Jizbollah.
Oh, stop it. For God's sakes. What is wrong with you?
You're not going to believe how hot it is.
Come on, Abdul.
So what do you like? What do you like for porn, fellas? What can I send for you? What do you like? You like a
wall? Yeah, sure.
How about Islamic licking?
Oh.
How about open wide and say Allah?
But yeah, I have to ask you, Abdul Al-Jazwat. Yes, Abdul Al-Jazwat is on the line with us with the Muhammad's Mama's porn titles. In an era where cartoonists have death threatened for drawing pictures of Allah, can you really put his name in a porn movie? Aren't you concerned about the fallout?
Let me tell you something. You look at a cartoon of Muhammad, right? You go, oh, I'm so angry, I want to kill somebody. You look at one of my films, you look under Fatima's burqa, you look at one of that, and you go, oh, I want to kill somebody. Hey, look at what's happening in my penis.
I see, so they'll be sidetracked.
I forget all about killing somebody.
So you're doing this...
Taking care of business, you know what I'm saying?
So you're doing this for the good of humanity.
That's right, because guys who are taking care of their guns cannot pick up their guns, you know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Okay, I got you.
A smoking hot Iraqi Bukkake series.
Oh, stop it.
That series is incredible. They're starting off with number one, Splatter the Human Shield.
Oh, God. Yes?
Following up with Cover Her With Your Curd.
Oh.
Wow.
God.
That's such a hot series, my baby.
It sounds like. Sounds good. You know what? Just ship all of those over, if you would.
I'll tell you, wait till you see Dropping the Dirty Bomb.
Okay.
We've got something for everyone over in Iraq. We got the Kurds covered. Of course, we'll cover it with your Kurds. We have an upper Shiite hole.
Oh, come on.
And stick it where the Sunni don't shine.
You're covering all your bases there, Abdul.
I think we are. I've got orders coming in right now. I got
to
go.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to us today. 106.7 KROQ with better understanding through stuff.
Radio, interviews?
Interviews.
Chance to ask people questions?
Yes, all of that.
In the long tradition of Ask Us here on the Kevin and Bean Show, this is one we've been looking forward to for a long time, and we've been able to set it up thanks to our friends over at Spike Television, who debut a new show called DEA, yes, Drug Enforcement Agency, that airs tonight at 11 o'clock on the Spike Channel, and we have Special Agent Sarah Pullen in the studio with us right now. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Let's get you. How does a little girl grow up and decide she wants to be a drug enforcement agency official?
Well, it is the Drug Enforcement Administration, first off.
Okay. I apologize.
There you go.
That's okay.
That's why we're here. We're here to learn, Sarah.
You
thank you.
There you go. Well, actually, way long ago, when I was in the fifth grade, my fifth grade teacher was actually arrested by DEA for selling cocaine.
And you didn't like her?
It was a him. But that's sort of where I first found out that the DEA even existed.
Right.
Were
you bummed because you lost your source in the fifth grade? Is that part of the problem?
Didn't know much about coke back in the fifth
good.
Grade.
I'm glad
sorry.
To hear that.
But didn't think much about it again until after college. I was working back in D.C. and working for the Public Defender Service and ran into a couple agents that I needed to interview and decided it was a great agency.
Did you plan on a career in law enforcement when you got out of school?
It was definitely something I was looking for. Yeah.
Now, does someone choose DEA because they personally have a problem with drugs and think that they'll be able to do their country the most good by getting drugs off the street? Or is it just, you know, you spin a wheel, it could have just as easily be guns, it could have just as easily be counterfeiting
the
or
Treasury
whatever.
Department or something?
Yeah.
Now, I think most of us really do believe that, you know, drugs are definitely a threat to society.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have some sort of personal impact with drugs, whether it's a family member, whether it's people we've seen on the streets. But we've seen, you know, the really negative impact that drugs have. And we want to make a difference. We want to do something positive.
What is
how
the?
Many go ahead, Lisa. Go ahead.
I was just wondering the training. How is it different from being a cop or FBI or any of that?
It's real similar. Although, you know, we in DEA like to think that our training is definitely the toughest and the hardest because of the people we deal with. You know, our agency's 16. You know, training 16 weeks long. It's tough. It's hard physically.
Yeah.
It's demanding, but our job's demanding. So, you know, that's what we do, and we think we're the best that's out there, and we're really proud of what we do.
It's funny you mentioned that because I think that of all aspects of the criminal world, you probably are going up against the most consistently dangerous group of people every time you go out on some sort of mission or call, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, drugs and guns go hand in hand.
Right.
And drugs, guns, and money are always dangerous. And we see that every day. And so definitely the people that we're out against, they're tough. They're mean. They're defending the money that they're trying to make. Mm-hmm. And so we do have a really bad element we have to deal with every day. So our training's tough.
Have you ever kicked down a door with guns a-blazing and yelled the words, "Freeze, mother"?
I have never done that, no.
Really?
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he takes their ganja. With every move he makes, another drug he takes. Oh, sh**, we all have to go hide our drugs now. D.A. Agent Man.
Not D.A.
D.A.
D.E.
D.E.A.
Omar, come on.
Time to ask a D.A. agent. Ask him all you can.
Or even better, in this case, ask her. Special Agent Sarah Pullen is in the studio. 1-800-520-1067.
That's a bad song.
That sure is bad.
Really bad.
That's what happens when you take Omar's drugs away, is that's what he comes up with.
Right.
Let's start with line one, please, Mike. We've got another Mike who's on the line from Burbank. Hey, Mike, you're on with Special Agent Sarah Pullen. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
What's your question, Mike?
I was wondering if you guys have a lot of gang member informants.
We have some. Obviously, if you're going to be a gang informant, you're going to have to know some things about drugs. That's obviously what we're looking at. But we do definitely have a lot of drug informants that are involved in gangs as well.
Does the drug business, is that rampant in the gang, the street gangs? Is that where you find most of the drug deals being done? Or is that a whole separate side of crime?
We definitely see that street gangs fund a lot of their activities with drugs.
I got
So it's sort of one of their number one money makers.
I see.
Thanks for the call, Mike. You know, a lot of people in law enforcement are frustrated that they do all the hard work and to make a good, clean bust, and then for whatever reason it doesn't end up getting prosecuted or the person doesn't end up getting convicted or whatever because of a technicality. Do you run into that a lot in your line of work too, Sarah?
We don't run into it a lot. We try to, you know, make sure that our prosecutions, you know, we turn everything over to the prosecutor and that all the materials that we do are pretty much completely covered. So we want to get them as much information as we can to make sure that they are prosecuted.
By the time you make the arrest, you're pretty sure that you got all your ducks in a row, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. Let's try Rose on line four. Rose is in Chatsworth. Rose, you're on the Kevin and Bean Show with Special Agent Sarah Pullen. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Okay, so we've all watched American Gangster. Is that really how the DEA got started by Frank Lucas, like in that whole thing?
Well, I wasn't around back then,
no.
and I saw the movie too, but I do, you know, that's one of the reasons that DEA was formed. You know, we were formed because at that particular time in our country, drugs were becoming rampant throughout the country, and they were becoming rampant with organized crime, and we were seeing it as a problem. So that's one of the reasons that we became an agency.
Cool. And I have one more really quick question.
Sure.
So you have no girls going so far to this on Friday to Six Flags. Okay, every time I listen, no girls are going. Is there a possibility that I can go?
I am going to say that's irrelevant to the topic, and yes, I'll be happy to hook you up. Hang on, okay? Yeah.
Hold on.
We'll fix you up with some tickets.
Speaking of girls, what's the ratio between men and women in the DEA?
We have about 10% of our special agents are women.
Are females?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
They have to pose as crack hoes.
I'm sure there have been a few of us that have posed as crack users.
All right, young lady,
users.
You're going to go out there and pretend you're a crack hoe.
That's their first assignment.
I hate to admit this, but Psychobike asked a really good question off air that I think is worth bringing onto the air. And he was asking you what the biggest drug out there that's a danger to America is. What'd you tell him and why?
Sure. Well, across the board, meth is definitely the number one drug that's the biggest danger to the U.S.
Yeah.
Not only the number of users, but just the danger and the deadly impact it has on people, plus just the manufacturing of it. It just, you know,
so
kills the environment. You know,
it's dangerous
the
to use, dangerous
it.
To make.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's enormously addictive. It's one of the highest addiction properties.
Highly addictive, right? And just destroys your body very, very quickly. It's just a real sad drug to see people taking.
Yeah.
But you can get so much stuff done in the course of a day, though. I mean, you really are. It's so productive for that one day.
Sure, it's got an upside, Bean. Don't get us wrong.
All right, let's get to the big question on line three. Ryan is on the air. He's in Huntington Beach. Hi, Ryan. You're on with Special Agent Sarah Pullen. Go ahead.
Ask him why.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah.
Yes, Ryan.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to know why
the DEA goes up to L.A. and raids the clubs. They don't arrest anybody, but they steal all the money and all the marijuana.
Yeah, they steal all the money and the marijuana,
they do.
Ryan.
He's
absolutely
about the
right.
Yes. What about that
and by clubs,
struggle?
By clubs, he means the medical marijuana. Right.
Medical marijuana. What about that struggle you have between the federal laws and the state of California laws? How do you deal with that, Sarah?
Well, there really isn't a huge struggle. And under federal law, which we're obviously a federal agency, marijuana is illegal in any form. So obviously the marijuana dispensaries are illegal,
right.
Even though I realize there is a controversy here in California. But we're a federal agency, so we have to enforce the federal drug laws. And we don't go out and steal anything. We actually have search warrants. We go out.
No, I heard you steal the money and the marijuana,
no,
Sarah.
Stealing. Oh, we're right. Actually seizing under the court order. We do actually prosecute people. We obviously do these search warrants. We obtain evidence, and we present it to the prosecutor's office, and they figure out who's going to get arrested.
That's
and prosecuted.
Where it must get complicated. When you're prosecuting a case in the state of California under federal laws, that must get messy in the courtrooms, I can imagine.
I'm sure it does, and thank goodness I'm not a prosecutor. Prosecutor,
right.
But I just do the law stuff.
But let me ask you this, and I know your hands may be tied because you're a current special agent. Maybe you're not going to be able to comment on this, but in every aspect of law enforcement, it seems like that there's a judgment call that can be made about which crimes are the real damaging ones, which crime. I mean, I know you don't really have the choice of which laws to enforce, but it seems like I'm sure a lot of people would say the DEA could better spend their time and resources by busting the next guy with meth rather than busting in on medical marijuana patients.
Well, here in L.A. is definitely a unique environment because of the California versus federal law. But the marijuana warrants that we do is such a small percentage of what we do every day. We're right. out there every day taking meth and coke and heroin and PCP and all the other drugs off the streets. It just so happens that the marijuana stuff gets a lot of media attention. So people hear about it a lot more, but it's a really, really small percentage of what we do every day.
Yeah. Sarah was mentioning off air that she has 1.9 million agents just in Riverside alone.
Just because you can invent something doesn't mean you have to. This is a great story. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. It was just announced in New Mexico that they're trying to combat – every state has the problem with the drunk drivers, and they do everything they can to kind of raise the awareness of don't drink and drive.
Right.
But they've come up with an unusual way to do it that I had not heard anyone do before, and that is talking urinal cakes.
Now, for you girls that don't frequent men's rooms,
yes.
They have like little – they're like hockey puck size cakes that they put in the urinals, and I think it's for – to smell, make
odor?
It smell fresh, right? I guess.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And now they're installing talking ones that'll give you a message. In New Mexico, it says, like, for example, you walk up to the urinal and it says, "You drink, you drive, you lose."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have that printed on the top of the hockey puck, and then it also talks to you. And it basically, it's a suggestion for people who are hitting the head, as my dad used to say in the Navy, on their way out of the bar at night. It's basically just a reminder, hey, don't drink and drive. And it's a pilot program. They got 500 of them in bars all over New Mexico, and they're going to wait and see how it goes. They cost $21 each, by the way, to buy these.
Mm-hmm.
And they're made by a company in China, and I love the name of the company, Wismark.
Wismark.
That's awesome.
Wismark. No word on whether they're working on a talking tampon for the ladies. But
oh!
Right now, no, I'm just lying. Because
yeah, well, don't
women,
say.
They drink and drive, too, though. So right
well,
now, the
it's
talking.
It's not like they're all on their period.
That's not the. That's
well,
not.
They do it.
Oh, man.
But when they are, Lisa, boy. They'll be so safe, is what I'm saying.
You're an odd man.
What's wrong with you?
So the urinal cakes we first heard about in this story in New Mexico, but now we're asking around, and apparently they got them here at K-Rock already. And I don't know if that's because we've had so many people pulled over and arrested on the way home from work. From here, but apparently they're using them here at the building.
The talking little urinal cakes? Mm-hmm. Talking, yeah. Psycho Mike, did we bug the restroom? That's how we got there?
Yeah, Omar and I yesterday, we decided to find out a little bit of like what it sounds like in these urinals with people talking back and forth with urinal cakes. So we just, put a little hood microphone action, and this is what we got.
So who's the first person that goes into the restroom?
I think it's Jed Fish.
Jed.
Okay.
My hidden microphone in the restroom.
Oh, 106.7 K-Rock, Carol Cutes, Jed the Fish.
Hello, Jed.
I remember I filleted Terrence Trent D'Arby in the bathroom at the Viper Room in 91.
That is interesting.
Ah!
No. Number one only.
That's Jed's catch of the day for sure. Oh, no more FiberCon for the Jedster.
Oh.
Why? Why did he have to kill the urinal cake?
Oh, did he say asshole? Is that what he said? Oh, that's sad.
That's awful.
I never thought I'd feel bad for a urinal cake, but Jed shouldn't have done that.
When the urinal cake was shouting number one only, that's a bad sign right there, right? All right, who do we have next? Who
else? Doc on the Rock. He's constantly the bad news. Destroying it.
Doc is the guy who runs down the hallway with the newspaper in his arm, and he says this. It's time.
Oh, God.
And we're all like, we don't need to know. So here's a little of that.
I see they finally put a new urinal cake in here.
Good morning.
Urinal cakes were first developed by the ancient Romans, who also collected urine to use for dry cleaning purposes.
What are you talking about?
Urinal cakes were used in Vietnam to repel bugs and other pests that bothered GIs in the trenches.
If you could just go to the bathroom, that'd be great.
Urinal cakes have been designed now to talk.
No, seriously, shut the f*** up.
No, you shut the f*** up.
What do you guys do over there after the show's aired? Well, you just send the tape straight over to the Smithsonian?
Well, that's what we might.
And who's next? We have one more?
Omar goes in, I guess.
DJ
know.
Omar Khan?
Yeah, idiot. He's fried his brain. Forgot that we bugged
you the microphone. You bugged it. You put the microphone in there.
I must have forgot.
What in God's name?
Ones and twos, baby. Let me get this kid up here.
Urinal Cake 2000 welcomes you to the laboratory. Sir, what are you doing?
That's some good shit. DJ Omar Khan, I'm DJ Omar Khan.
Sir, are you aware that methamphetamine
causes massive
brain damage and can affect the central nervous system?
You, Urinal Cake, DJ Omar Khan, DJ Omar Khan.
That's the drugs talking, sir. Are you really angry at me, or are you angry at yourself?
Well, now that I look at it, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe I should rethink how I'm living my life. Thanks, Urinal Cake.
It's my pleasure, Omar. I'm not just here to get peed on.
How about that? Making a difference.
That is a sweet story.
That is fantastic.
I have to say.
Thank you.
And they killed it again at this year's K-Rock Weenie Roasty Fiesta 2008. They always kill it. We're talking about Pennywise. A really short list of the all-time great K-Rock bands. Ladies and gentlemen, wouldn't you have to say that Pennywise would be on that list?
I mean,
seriously.
Yeah.
Fletcher, good morning. How are you?
Hello, sir.
Byron, how are you?
Good day, sir.
I understand Jim's resting his vocals in the next room because y'all are going to be singing in a little while.
No, he's here.
He's here.
He's in the room, too. Hey, Jim, welcome. Good morning.
Hello. How are you?
20 years, guys. What's it like? How's it feel?
Good.
Surprising?
You're making us feel old with the 20-year thing. We started playing when we were 10.
We started when we were one, so yeah.
Yeah, you were one. Exactly right. Yeah. No, that's something to be proud of. I mean, let's face it, most bands don't make that. I mean, I'm sure that – I don't know if that was your plan when you got together as you guys looked at each other and said, I'm deeply in love. This is going to be it for the rest of our lives. But but amazing how it worked out. And Southern California, is this the biggest spot on the globe for y'all? Because I know you play everywhere, but is this home base the biggest place for you?
Yeah, I mean the South Bay and L.A. is our home, and we have all our friends and a lot of fans here. The whole surf skate scene is really popular here, and we're popular in that realm. So Australia does pretty well for us.
We actually have a couple gold records in Australia, but the population down there is like pretty small, so it almost doesn't count.
You know, it's interesting when you're talking about MySpace and talking about, you know, the way that is being used for promotion. You know, a lot of the bands that are on the Warped Tour this year, you know, groups like Against Me, I mean, that's a real factor in the rise of a group like that as they get on MySpace and a friend tells a friend and the next thing you know, they've built them, you know, quite an audience out there. I mean, it is a remarkable tool.
That's the tool that all the A&R guys are using now. They just surf MySpace looking for bands. I mean, most bands will have a video up, songs and it is a huge tool, and it's also, I mean, great for kids that can't get record deals. You know, they get on there, they put their stuff up, and they start generating a fan base, and before you know it, they're playing shows, and they don't even have a record out. And that's a really cool thing. And the music industry's evolving, and MySpace is a huge, tool.
You know, speaking of huge tools, Governor Spitzer, you saw in the news a lot last week, that strumpet, his little hooker friend, you know, she's got music up. She's selling it. I mean, she sold like 2 million singles or something like that.
That's
just
great.
Based on the notoriety from having sex with the governor.
I didn't know that.
I guess it was all part of the plan.
It's a new way to get your name out there.
Wow.
Yeah. Forget about sponsors. Just you know, have sex for money.
And right, whatever it takes, right? Pennywise is in the studio with us here on the World Famous K-Rock this morning. What do you want to play first, guys?
This one's called Western World.
Love it. Can't live without it. K-Rock.
the Western world, the steroid boys and video girls. We are the viral then announce songs, and the anchor man can't stop lying.
How about that?
Yes.
How about Pennywise Live?
Didn't sound so crappy.
No.
That was nice.
What else you got, guys?
We're going to play a little.
Yeah, a little Brohim.
Yeah.
For all the fans out there and all the friends.
Jason. Baseline, Randy.
Life is the most precious thing you can lose.
Oh, really? That's you, guy.
Oh, it is?
Doing our part to support Americans with Disabilities.
I don't know if you've seen this. It's becoming a popular trend where, for example, Michael Jackson reissued Thriller with some updated versions and some remixes and stuff like that because it's 25 years later.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to sell albums these days. So record companies are going through the catalog and they're going, what can we re-release maybe with some new tracks or some remixes or something like that, get people to buy essentially the same album over again and make a little bit extra cash? And that's what they're doing. It seems like every week there's another one that's out there.
Now, Dr. Dre has reissued some of the Death Row stuff.
That's correct.
That's what I'm hearing. Snoop, Warren G, Nate Dogg, a bunch of people going back into the studios and reimagining their songs, perhaps, or remixing them. And I believe we have Nate Dogg on the phone. Good morning, Nate.
Yeah, what's up?
Okay.
All right, we should mention, by the way, that unfortunately over the holidays, Nate Dogg had a little bit of a stroke, paralyzing the left side of his body. But you're going to be okay. You're going to recover, right, Nate Dogg?
Yeah, dog. It's fine. Dog is wrong. Hold up.
What?
The fried chicken was disappointed.
I love you on the New Year's Eve show with Ryan Seacrest. First of all, let me say that.
But dog, dog, old I.
What?
Smoke weed up.
All right. Why don't you let us do most of the talking here, Nate Dogg? Basically, you're on because you have gone back and you've reimagined some of the classic Nate Dogg songs from the 90s, and that's what's out for people to buy, right?
Shizzle, dog. It's my early dog work.
You mind if I pick it up from here?
Yeah.
We have some clips. The first one, I believe, is Ain't No Fun. Anything you want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, good.
I remember this song from 1993. Snoop Dogg.
Snoop?
Snoop Dogg.
Right, okay. Here's a clip that you can get now.
When I met you last night, before you opened up again, I had respect for a lady, but now my teeth are all bad.
That's not.
Because you gave me honey pussy.
What, huh?
And you even licked my balls.
That doesn't seem like a party.
Just leave my number on the camera. Yeah. And I promise further. Give the call.
All right, listen.
And then your friend comes.
This is my favorite part.
Come on over. Break your roof. And if you can't fresh, then a baby. Just lay back and refresh your mouth. Because I've never been.
All right, stop this. Come on.
Yeah.
Wait, here's my favorite part.
I love who I was.
There's nothing funny about a stroke, first of all.
That is so true, Dick.
There just isn't. There's nothing funny about that. We're not making fun of you, Nate. We're happy that you're doing as well as you are.
I feel the stroke hasn't... my voice.
It has not at all.
No, you sound terrific. You really do.
And just to behind the scenes, here's the difference between Lisa May and I. Laughing uncontrollably, shaking her head no.
Pretty much it.
Nate, I hesitate to ask, but how about the all-time classic Regulate? Have you done any updating on that one?
I had to redo Regulate because this is my biggest hit with war.
Sure. Warren.
Warren G. Mm-hmm. Warren G, of course.
People won't be disappointed, dog.
Okay, here's a little clip of that.
The hilly side of LBC, Mr. Trump, I'm a 1G. Send a call for girls, need to streak. Oh, skirts, 213.
Come on.
I don't.
Sounds good.
All right, let's talk about the Internet Roundup.
Yeah!
We have a link up there. Ralph, tell us what this link is.
This is one of my favorite stories ever. This comes from Gawker.com. And what had happened was someone tipped off Gawker.com, said, you have to check out Craigslist in New York City. There's a douchebag on there in the personal section trying to find a girl. Mm-hmm. And his Craigslist posting was, Mr. Right is, I-Z, here waiting on you, just the letter U. And when you open it up, it was just one sentence. Listen, if you really want to get to know me, just send me a note. That was it.
Okay.
And then he followed it with 30 pictures in the ad.
30 pictures?
Yeah. Wow. Pictures like this. Him wearing those great
Kanye
classic 80s sunglasses with the Venetian blinds on them.
He's wearing the Kanye West glasses.
Holding like a bunch of 20s in his hand to the camera like he's a player.
I make it rain.
Yeah. Here looking like Dave the King of Mexico here, holding some more 20s, mm-hmm. wearing a faded Joker t-shirt from the 1980s.
Yeah.
Here he's just flipping his finger to the camera because he's a badass.
Because that's how he rolls.
Yeah, here he is just holding up some more 20s to the
you
camera.
You can't even see me behind my 20s.
It's like he's got like $80 in his hand. He's showing the camera like he's Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Anyway, now, Lisa, does that work for the ladies if they just see pictures of dudes holding a bunch of 20s? Is that attractive
there's
at all?
There's really not a woman I know that thinks that's
hot. Oh, I bet there's some.
It's funny how Gawker says that he's included for some reason what appears to be some unrelated wedding photographs that they can't even find him in. 30 pictures in this ad. So someone tips Gawker off. They take the photos off Craigslist and they publish them on Gawker, because
awesome.
Gawker's one of these websites just likes to, you know,
snarky, F with people. Basically.
Yeah, F with people. Well, he finds out, the guy, Mr. Right, in the photos.
The dude with the money?
Finds out.
Yeah.
And he calls the Gawker people and starts threatening them with all kinds of violence and legal action and what have you, saying
Wait.
You can't use those photos.
These are his photos that, I mean, he posted them on Craigslist, which
yeah.
is public and available for anybody to see, right?
These photos are mines.
He
reminds
says?
Them, yeah. And they remind him, look, it's a public forum. Craigslist is a public forum. We just pulled him off, and we're a public forum. We're just reporting the story.
Right.
Well, he doesn't want to hear any of it. So
they
tape recorded the conversation they had with him, and then they posted the conversation on Gawker.com.
Awesome.
And these are some clips from their conversation with him.
These photos are mines, right? I posted it on Craigslist probably 3 days ago. I went to the website. It has my post, and people write comments making fun of my pictures. Some guy that posted, you know what I mean? He wrote funny things about me, and the thing is that he didn't ask me permission. That's the first thing. The second thing is I could press charges on him because that's fraud.
What?
Okay. That's fraud. I'm not sure he's a lawyer, but I don't know how that's fraud.
I posted it, and that's fraud.
Those photos is mine.
Those photos are mine. I
push on, black man, push on.
I mean, it's like if I take your picture of you naked and, you know, put it on a website, that's fraud right there. You know, I get girls pretty much. You know, I'm a young dude. I do what I do. I'm a producer. But my whole... You know,
I'm a producer.
Oh, this guy
is produces
gold.
Photos of him being a douchebag. It's the only thing
wow.
he's produced.
Wow. It's the same
girls.
As taking naked pictures of you and putting them on.
The whole problem is it's not because of that. It's because why would somebody take my pictures without my permission? It's like taking your... Social Security and using it without your permission.
Nope. It's not
just like
that.
It's not like using your Social Security number at all.
Really doesn't have anything to do with that.
And then people are joking on me. You see the comments. What girl wrote a comment there that is saying, oh, you know, he's a pretty guy, but they say he lives with his mommy. He got 600. What the That's embarrassing. What happens if I walk in the sheets and they say, oh, look at that guy. That oh, he has. So, come on, man. Like, that's not cool. Like, I would punch the whoever did this, and I will
f***
him up because you don't do that.
That's battery,
so,
isn't it?
That's fraud. I think everything's fraud.
Everything's fraud, okay. Yeah.
So his complaint is that Gawker put up the photos,
yeah.
and people made fun of the photos.
Exposed him for the a-hole that he is.
Exactly.
And people are making fun of him, and rightfully so.
Absolutely. He's one talented Negro.
Well,
what's going to happen is, before I do any illegal actions, they're going to take it off and say it never happened. But you know what? I'm 10 times smarter than these people, because I'm going to record it right now. Absolutely. You see, it's not your fault, but I know how the business runs in New York. I know how it all runs, these people, how they do it. But play smart, but I'm way smarter. I'm going to call my lawyer, and this is going to be a problem.
He's 10 times smarter than the Gawker people.
That's what he says, and that's why he doesn't know he's being recorded.
This guy's not 10 times smarter than a brick.
Because I didn't like that. That's not funny.
Well,
it's a little funny.
He knows how business works in New York, though, Ralph. Come on.
He
knows
how it all works.
That's true.
He's a producer, for God's sakes.
So, Internet Roundup at the KRock.com, the Kevin DeBean section. That's where you can see the photos and hear the audio, and it's hilarious.
I'm unclear as to whose pictures they are.
These photos are mine!